We're in a series on the Ten Commandments. Basically, we've been just taking one commandment a week and working through them, and we're starting to get into the hard ones where it's just a little tiny bit of information, you know, like, don't steal. Okay, how do you spend 45 minutes on thou shalt not steal? Well, we may not. We may go two next week instead of that, but this week we got one, and so we've been just taking each week and going through, and so today we're on the fifth commandment. And the fifth commandment is to honor your father and mother. And so my initial thought was, you know how a lot of churches will do, and they'll have the little children, and they'll come up front, and then they have a special message just for the little children. And I thought, that would be kind of cool to do, right? We just bring all the little kids up front, and then they sit here, and then we're all watching from the side. And then I'm like, well, yeah, but what about teenagers? Could we have the teenagers come up front? Because they're kind of kids, too, that wouldn't they have to honor their father and mother? But teenagers aren't usually included in that little group. So I thought, well, maybe we'll just have little children and then teenagers. Like, they can come up front, and we'd have to probably scoot some chairs back. And then, like, well, what about, like, young adults? You know, those that aren't married, right? And, like, do they still have to honor their father and mother? Okay, so we could have, like, little children and then teenagers, and we'd have the young adults up here. And thought, okay, that would be good. Well, what about older adults? Like, their parents are still living. Like, would they have to honor their father and mother? Then we have little children and teenagers and young adults and then older adults. And then I'm like, well, what about somebody like me whose both of their parents have died? Like, do I still have to honor my father and mother? Yeah, and so I just figured it would be better to just sit where we're at and talk to everybody this morning. So this sermon is for everybody, right? And I think there's an idea that, okay, I got away with this with 1, 2, 3, and 4. Didn't do so well on number 5, though. I'm not one of the little kids. I have to obey mom and dad, and so I'm good. Oh, surprise, surprise, you're not good in that either. And you'll find by the time we're done that, wow, this really hits all of us right square between the eyes, you know. And this series on the Ten Commandments, boy, it's been convicting, I think, for all of us. And so let's get a little bit of background on them and how we got here and you know, why we label these 10. You know, when Jesus walked on the earth, he had all kinds of challenges that he faced. And typically, the people who really challenged him were the religious leaders, right? They're the ones who doubted him. They're the ones who persecuted him. And they tried to get him to say something or do something that would be sinful or hypocritical or go against the culture. And they tried to trap them. And so Matthew 22, we'll just watch one of these instances. It says, one of them, a lawyer, not to dog any of my lawyer people in here, but one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. Teacher, what is the great commandment of the law? Right? In other words, what's the most important one? I mean, we got the law, right? 613 commandments. Which is the greatest? He said to them, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And on these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. So when he's talking about the whole law, he's not talking about actually the Ten Commandments. He's talking about the 613 commandments in the law, in which, by the way, the 613 commandments are summed up by the Ten Commandments. And then what Jesus does, he takes the Ten Commandments and he says, actually, there's just two, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then the second one is to love your neighbor as yourself. And so what you see then is the law is then broken up into two sections. So the first part of the law is to love the Lord your God with heart, your heart, soul, mind, and strength, right? That's commandments 1 to 4. And so you shall have no other gods before me. That's number one. Number two is you shall not have any idols, worship or serve idols, right? Number three is you shall not take God's name in vain. And number four is you should remember the Sabbath. So those four things, if you want to know what it looks like, practically speaking, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, it's the first four commandments. God is first in everything. Well, what does it look like then to love my neighbor as myself? Well, that starts from commandment 5 all the way to 10. What would it look like to love my neighbor? Well, first, I have to honor my parents. And then not murder, and don't commit adultery, and don't steal, and don't bear false witness, and don't covet. So, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, commandments 1 to 4. Love your neighbor as yourself, commandments 5 to 10. That's what it looks like. And what the first commandment, remember, set the stage for the three commandments, and actually the fifth commandment sets the stage for the next five commandments. That make sense? All right, so let's just read our text. Exodus chapter 20, verse 12. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. I don't think anybody's really surprised to learn that the first place to demonstrate how much we love our neighbor is in our closest neighbor. It's our parents. It's in our home. Honor, he says, your father and mother. So if you're taking notes this morning, we've got more than a few points. We've got a lot of points. Number one is the prescription to honor, right? The prescription. You might want to say the command to honor. Well, nobody's surprised that this is a commandment, right? This is one of those ones that people don't typically forget. And in a perfect world, I get that, but what if you have bad parents? Or what if your parents are deceased? What if you have those kind of parents that abandoned you or abused you? Well, we're going to address all those things this morning, but the text doesn't say, right? It doesn't have a clause in there. There's no exception clause. There's no but in here. It just says, honor your father and your mother. That's it. And if you do that, then you're going to live long lives. Now, some people will take this and they'll say, well, man, that guy died really early. I bet he didn't honor his father and his mother. Or, boy, that guy lived a long time and he must have honored his father and his mother. That's why. I don't think so. What's the context? Remember, every text has context. So what's the context? Well, the context is that God is in covenant, creating a covenant with Moses and the people of God. It's the Mosaic covenant, and he is giving them the land of Canaan. So this is part of the covenant. These are my laws. This is what you're to do, and I'm giving you this land. And the key, what God is saying, listen, the key to you staying in this land is to love and to honor and to fear God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and strength. And where are you going to learn to do that? In your home. In your home is where you'll learn to love God. It'll show itself. How can you say you love God, John would say later? How can you say you love God if you don't love your brother, the one next to you? Who's closer than your parents? Right? In your home is where it starts. And the key to them staying in the land is honor your parents. Okay? They're going to learn that in the home. And so goes the family. As goes the family, so goes the nation. And we looked at it a few weeks ago. The success and the failures of civilizations always trace back to what's happening in the families of that nation. So I think of our nation. I fear for our nation. And I fear for our nation not because of the politicians that occupy the state houses of our nation. I fear for our nations because of the parents that occupy the houses in our nation. We're producing children who don't fear authority outside the home. And the reason they don't fear authority outside the home is because they've never been really taught how to have a healthy fear of authority in their homes. And we've got a number of teachers in here, and you talk to the teachers in our schools, and you talk to policemen in our streets, and there is no fear of authority. I mean, is anybody as appalled as I am to see how young people are so brazenly disrespectful to police officers? I mean, some of the things that they'll say to police officers, you think, there is no fear at all of authority. And that's one of the reasons I'm so grateful for a church like ours. Because our commitment is to help and train families. We love families. And I'm thankful to have a church family where we have spiritual brothers and sisters in Christ. We have mothers and fathers and grandparents in the church as part of the church family. And so a healthy church family is often what God uses to redeem those who had really bad families. Like that's what the church is for. And so I would say, just as a little side note, if you need help with your family, we have scores of people. I mean, tons of people that can help. If you go, man, I want to start homeschooling my kids. We've got tons of homeschoolers in here, Right? They can help you. If you go, man, I can't do this homeschooling thing. I need to find a good school. Listen, we've got tons of teachers in here. We can show you the way. Children are being disrespectful. You know, parents are provoking their children to anger. Like, we can help with that. Like, the scriptures are so real and so true and so poignant in how it goes through those things. A healthy church family is what God uses. So utilize those resources. We're not the church that you go in and you go, hey, how's it going? Oh, great, wonderful. You know, just fought with your family all the way here. You're reaching the back seat, trying to spank your kids. And oh, no, we're lovely. Everything's wonderful. And like, it's okay. Like, it's okay to say we're not wonderful. It's okay to not be okay. It's not okay to stay like that. Children, honor your father and mother. What does it mean to honor? We're going to spend the bulk of our time on that word honor. The Hebrew word means to be heavy. It can also mean to glorify. To honor is to ascribe value and worth and respect. To honor is to hold in high regard. I mean, think about that. Just think about those terms. To be heavy, to glorify, to ascribe value, worth, respect. Children, hold your parents in high regard. And so when you look at the relationship between children and parents in the Old Testament, it's really kind of a neat study. Leviticus 19:3 says, every one of you shall reverence his mother and his father, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. To revere your mother and father is to hold them in fear. It's an awe, it's a reverential respect that you have for your parents. Now, it's not that cowering down type of fear, right? You ever, we don't ever use our hands like to spank our kids, right, anymore. We did years ago. But I was always scared that I'd go into Walmart and I'd like reach for something and my kids would go, like, ah! You know, cower down in fear. Like, I wanted my hands to be, like, to love my children and, you know, to comfort my children, restore my children. I didn't want my kids to be afraid of that. So that's not the kind of fear I'm talking about there. It's a respectful fear. Deuteronomy 26, look what it says. And that he will set you up high above all nations, which he has made for praise, fame. And then he uses the word honor. That you shall be a consecrated people to the Lord your God as he has spoken. And this may be my favorite part of this whole working definition of honoring your parents. Now, listen to this closely, because this goes for all age groups, okay? The idea here is to enhance the reputation of your parents. To enhance the reputation of your parents. It's to praise them. It's to speak well of them to others. So I would simply ask, like, how do you speak about your parents to others? I mean, teenagers, when you say, like, oh, my dad's such a jerk, which I'm sure my teenagers have said more than once. But it's true for all of us, right? We are to enhance the reputation of our parents. If they're deceased, can you still enhance their reputation? Yeah, sure can. Now, we see this idea in the New Testament as well. Look at Ephesians 6, verse 1. He says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And so the idea behind obeying your parents in the Lord, right, it's right, is to the extent, think about this now, to the extent that you obey your parents, you obey God. And to the degree that you disobey your parents, you're disobeying God. And when I think about biblical obedience, listen, biblical obedience is immediate. In other words, when your parents speak, you listen and respond the first time. Okay, and it's complete. It's not partial, right? You don't do it halfway. Partial obedience is disobedient. It's with a good attitude, right? So you're not rolling your eyes, you're not talking back, you're not slamming the door, you're not mumbling under your breath as you walk away. And Paul just says, children, obey your parents in the Lord because it's right. It doesn't say, children, obey your parents in the Lord because they're right. They say, it's right. Listen, your parents are going to make tons of mistakes. They're not always going to do the right thing, and they're not always going to apologize in doing the wrong thing, even if they knew they did the wrong thing. They make mistakes just like you do. And so you are to obey because God gave your parents to you. He divinely ordained your parents to be your parents. And to honor your parents is being obedient to God. Okay, let's look at Roman numeral number 2, the power of honor. Because I know the thinking is like, yeah, okay, I get it. I'm supposed to honor and obey my parents, right? And as parents, wouldn't you say, though, that I think we have a responsibility to live in a way that makes it easy for our children to honor and obey us? Right? Shouldn't we be honorable? And see, a lot of parents, they love to focus on that Ephesians 6, 1 to 3. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. That's right. You want to live long? I brought you in this world. I take you out of this world. You want to live long? Obey me. But they forget about Ephesians 6, 4. Look what it says. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So you see a negative side, don't provoke your children to anger. Then you see the positive side is bring them up in discipline and instruction. Okay, and so the first part of this is negative, don't provoke. But let's look at both of those. So don't provoke and it is the warning not to overcorrect. Anybody do that? Man, I can do that. We as parents need to create conditions so that our children understand and embrace God's instructions and God's ways. And as parents, and I honestly believe it's out of a love for our children, like we overcorrect. Like we don't let our kids mess up. You know, we protect them from every little thing, even though we know that the greatest changes in our lives are when we messed up and we said, I will never do that again. We protect our children from consequences. And so we have to be really careful to guard against the tendency to overcorrect and be overly critical. Like, don't pick on your kids or embarrass your kids. Don't use your children as sermon illustrations. Oh, no, that wasn't in my notes. Don't smother your kids. Right? That's the negative part of the command. The positive side is to bring them up. The idea is to bring them up to maturity. You know, raise your kids to be adults, not unruly kids in adult bodies. Raise your kids to be adults. Last week, this is just a side note. I attended this conference on counseling addicts and addictions. One of the speakers, Mark Shaw, he just kind of threw it out there and then kind of like I'm doing today, just kind of threw it out there and gave a little bit of information. I really want to study this more, but he was saying that, you know, the way that Americans are now raising their children is we are raising them to be addicts. Of course, I'm really intrigued by that, you know, and I'm like, what does that mean? And so he just kind of threw it out there. He says, so when your kid has difficulties, you know, really difficult time, maybe a brother or sister was mean to them, maybe they got bullied at school, you know, maybe they don't feel good. I mean, like, what do? How do you respond to that? And he says, when your kids have difficulties, do you give them time, more time on a video game? Or do you give them a treat to eat so that they make them feel better and then they're happy? He says, that's what the addict does. Instead of a cookie, they turn to crack. Instead of a video game, they turn to gambling. And so we are unknowingly, I don't think anybody purposely goes, man, one day I hope my kid's a crack addict. Like, that's not the idea. We just want our kids happy, and so we give them these things to make them happy through their sorrows, and we're teaching them to turn to something other than God to help them in their time of need. We're teaching them, and we're providing them temporary happiness outside of who God is. Why? Because we love them, and we want them happy. And let me just say, maybe we're modeling the same thing. I mean, what do you do when you're sad or overwhelmed, when you're really tired? The chocolate? Pizza? Feel better? You know, daddy needs a new boat. Mama's got to have her wine. Don't talk to me until after I've had my coffee. You know, it's our job as parents to train our children. And they're going to be who we are, right? They're going to follow so many of the things we do. And so it's our job as parents to train our children to obey immediately. And I've said this for years. Listen, don't count. Right? Don't count. What do you mean by that? Like you tell your kid, hey, you know, you need to pick up your shoes and put them in your room. And they keep walking off. One, two, two and a half, two and three quarters. Two, did you not hear me? Then they take their shoes. You know why? It's because we're teaching them that one doesn't matter, two doesn't matter, two and a half doesn't matter, two and three quarters doesn't matter, two and seven eighths doesn't matter. What matters is the second time when I say, did you not hear me? That's what we're teaching our kids. I mean, and just let's take this to its full end. When do we want them to obey God? First time God speaks? Or the fifth time? I mean, how much turmoil do you have in your life because God spoke to you back then that told you to do something, to change something, and you didn't do it then, and now you're paying for it now and go, man, I'll never do that again. And we model that as parents. We have to teach our children to obey. Well, how do you do it? We kind of came up with this response years ago when children were younger. We said, say it once, say it clearly, elicit a response, and provide consequences if it doesn't happen. Okay, I'll say that again. So say it once, pick up your shoes, okay? Make sure it's clear, right? Elicit a response. In other words, hey, pick up your shoes, and then they keep walking. Did you hear me? No, I didn't hear you. Could be real genuine, I couldn't hear you, right? But if you provide consequences and you didn't elicit a response, I promise you they're going to tell you, I didn't know you said that. I didn't hear you, right? Say it once, say it clearly, elicit a response, and then some kinds of appropriate consequences have to be a result if they didn't do it. Why? Because we want them to learn to obey the first time we say it. Because we're teaching them, we're training them to obey God the first time they read it. We need to bring them up, right? Not just physically into maturity, but spiritually to maturity. We need to teach them God's word. We need to teach them the values of a local church. And when Paul is writing this in Ephesians 6, listen, children were like less than human beings in the Roman Empire. And you see in Ephesians 6, he says, children. You imagine all the kids, they're probably all just kind of sitting there and maybe doing their little, you know, drawing or something like that, paying attention, but not like engaged. And then he says, children. Every eye looks up. Sometimes I'll do that and I'll say, I was talking to Ashton the other day, and I'll see Ashton pop up like, heard my name. Paul assumes that the children are in big church. Paul assumes that the children are part of the local church meeting, the public church meeting. And as a team of elders and as a foundational principle in the church, we believe that God holds children morally responsible for what's preached in the church. Like, they're not just here just to be here. Like, we want them listening. We put these blanks on here. I want the kids filling them out. Even if they have to copy you, I can't tell you how many of our kids have sat next to Sherry who couldn't read, but they knew their alphabet, and Sherry would fill in a blank, and then they would fill it in behind her. Sometimes she would even write those, you know, those little dots, so all they had to do is trace around the lines. We're teaching them to hear God's word and respond to God's word. You know, our granddaughter, Eliana, who's been in the service she's four now. So she's been in service literally her whole life. And we'll have lunch afterwards, and she'll tell me about things that I preached about. I shouldn't go into all the Greek or the Hebrew, but she knows, like, what I talked about. And as parents, like, talk to them about what they learn in church. Talk to them what they learned in Sunday school. And I hope your kids are in our Sunday school programs. We have so many excellent teachers. God has given us just faithful people of God to teach your children every week. I was in Tom Bacon's class this morning. We have 30 plus people in there this morning learning hermeneutics. They go, what in the world's hermeneutics? How do you study your Bible? You know, it's not like, you know, some novel that you just read. It's how to actually study it, how to get the most out of it. And our kids, I think, can learn that. And I think it's important that to understand that that's our responsibility as parents. And I think it's also important to understand that some parents aren't very honorable. Some parents aren't deserving of honor. You know, they've done some terrible things to some of you. Some of you, you are where you are now because of the way that you responded to how they treated you then. And so let's talk about that, the problem of honor. Because everybody always asks me, well, is there a time when I don't have to honor my parents? Well, I do think that as you get older and you start your own family, that the idea of obeying your parents changes. Right? I don't obey my parents when I got married, but I'm still called to honor them. Is there a time, though, when you don't need to honor them? And as I had thought through this, I thought, well, I can think of three areas of times maybe that you wouldn't have to honor. But I still say if you're going to err on the side of honor. Right? Don't err on the side of dishonor. But three areas. First of all is in the area of salvation. If your parents demand that you choose between God or them, God wins every single time. I've seen parents try to manipulate you, keep you from obeying God. Listen, obey God first. I've seen families that will visit on the weekends because they know that if they come on the weekends, then they're going to be able to kind of guilt you into not coming to church. You know what we would do? For years we did this. My mom or whatever, they'd come up visit and stuff. And we'd always say, we'd love for you to come to church on tomorrow. Oh, that's okay. I'll probably sleep in. And we didn't hound them about it. We didn't say, oh, okay, well, we'll just stay home with you. No, we said, well, we should be done by noon. There's a restaurant. Can we just meet you over there? You know, most of the times my mom would say, I'll just cook dinner. So when you guys come home, then you can just eat with us. Like, okay, that's cool. But she was not going to get priority over me. She was not going to get priority over our worship of God. Okay, so obey God first. Another area where you don't have to honor them is in the area of marriage and family. Believe it or not, there are some parents who demand that you choose them over and above your spouse or your kids. That's the case. Guess who wins? Your family does. And as a very broad category, I'd just say in the area of wisdom. We have a lot of scenarios that we could go through, but if your parents were abusive or they're still being abusive, then you stay away. I've had to work with a number of people who have had to write letters to abusive, controlling parents to get them to stop. I met a number of years ago with a pastor that he wanted to meet with me for counseling because his dad was transgender before transgender was cool like it is now. And just some of the things that happened to him as a result of that. Because this guy's a pastor, and he wants to write a letter basically writing his dad out of everything in his life. And so we met probably for 6 or 8 weeks. And around that 7th week, 8th week, he said, you know, I want to write my dad. He said, the one thing that I can tell you that I really appreciate about my dad is that he gave me a love for God's word and a respect for God's word. He said, I don't think I'd be a pastor if my dad hadn't have done that. And I said, now you're ready to write that letter. And so there are parents that have abused you, that have abandoned you, and there's still a way that you can honor them many times. And so they want to be a priority over God and your family, and they can't have that authority there. I've also seen, I think you guys could agree with this, that if you honor bad parents, it can be redemptive. Right? If you honor them, it can be redemptive. I've also seen children, adult children, with really bad parents who don't deal with it biblically, and they end up really angry and bitter. Just angry people. What happened? I never really dealt with this side biblically. And so a summary of this portion here, Roman numeral 3, is simply this. Honor your parents as much as you can until you have to obey God rather than man. Okay? Honor your parents as much as you can until you have to obey God rather than man. Number 4, the practice of honor. The practice of honor. You know, so much of what we do and who we are because of the values and the morals and the principles that we were raised with. And I can tell you as a parent, like, that's a huge weight of responsibility. But I thought it'd be good just to kind of break down the different age groups so that we can see what it looks like to honor or obey your parents for different age groups. And so number 1, let's talk about the small children first. The small children first. The very first time that God uttered words to children is what we just read in the text today. Exodus 20, first time God talks to children. And so I would say that we get a lot. We've put so much time and energy and money in our churches into children's ministries and vacation Bible schools and stuff like that. I'm not against that at all. But I think we do have to be careful. I think we baptize way too many children that really don't understand the gospel. That prayed some prayer that an evangelist told them and asked Jesus into your heart, which is terribly heretical. And then we think they're saved because they were baptized. And I'm not saying that kids can't be saved at early, young ages, 4 or 5 years old. I just think that if you look at this text, what you see is really the proof for salvation in a kid is how well they honor and obey their parents. This is the command that's given to children. Children, honor and obey your parents. And I think it's terrible that we think of our kids as Christians because they prayed a prayer. By the way, where's the sinner's prayer in the Bible? There's not one. Am I against it? No. I'm just saying, make sure that we understand what our children are committing to. Are they committing to an abstract idea of a God who would save them someday? Or are they saying, I'm committing my life to following Jesus Christ? It's a good test for a Christian fruit. How well do they obey their parents? Number 2, what about for young adults? And we'll spend a lot of time here. You go, well, who are young adults? Well, I don't know. It's basically teenagers. And the way I looked at it is teenagers and unmarried 20s. Okay, so teenagers and unmarried 20s, which is the age where tension is normal. Okay, tension is normal. But let me tell you, disrespect that cannot be tolerated. I think the world is telling our young people to just follow their heart. Right? Just follow your heart. Do whatever feels good and live for yourself. Listen, the worst advice somebody can possibly give is to listen to their hearts. Look what Jeremiah said. Jeremiah 17, verse 9. The heart is more deceitful than all else and is desperately sick. Who can understand it? Our hearts are the most deceitful parts of our bodies. Nothing lies to us more consistently than our hearts do. Our hearts don't tell us the truth. You know what our hearts do? They tell us what we want to hear. They tell us what's going to make us feel good. And so don't trust your heart. Trust in God. Don't follow your heart. Follow Jesus. And regardless what our culture says, listen, being disrespectful and being disobedient to parents puts you on really dangerous ground. God saw this so seriously in the Old Testament. When he was making the law, he actually had execution as the end result for rebellious children. Look at Deuteronomy 21, verse 18. If any man has a stubborn and rebellious son, all the girls like, phew, not me. I think it means daughters as well. If any man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey his father or his mother, when they chastise him, he will not even listen to them. Then his father and mother shall seize him, bring him out to the elders of his city at the gate of his hometown, and they shall say to the elders of this city, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey us. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Then all the men of his city shall stone him to death. So you shall remove the evil from your midst, and all Israel will hear of it and fear. The Old Testament solution to juvenile delinquency is stoning. It's the death penalty. Listen, we don't do that today. But I would just say this. Listen, that's the background. That's how seriously God sees honoring your father and mother. I would take obedience and honor very seriously. And so I thought, well, what does it look like for young adults then to honor their parents? What are some categories or maybe questions? And so I've got a few here. Number one is, how is your speech? How do you talk to your parents, and how do you talk about your parents? How do you speak to your siblings? And I can tell you, as a parent, fighting with your siblings is not honoring to your parents. You know what else isn't honoring? Complaining and grumbling. Like Paul would say, do all things without grumbling or complaining or disputing. So it first begins in your tongue. Proverbs 20, verse 20, it says, "He who curses his father or his mother, his lamp will go out in time of darkness." Another question I was asked is, how is your body language and your attitude? Right? The whole rolling of the eyes thing, storming off to your room, mumbling beneath your breath, slamming doors. I don't know like what you'd call it, but is that honorable? No. Imagine going to your boss, and your boss is like, "Listen, you know, I need you to work a couple of, right? What are they going to learn not to do that in your home? Like, that's not okay. That's not honorable. Another question is, how's your clothing? Do you push the edge in the way that you dress? I know a lot of parents, like, you are not walking out of the house looking like that, right? May not be immodest. You know what they're thinking? I don't want anybody to know you're my child if you're wearing those clothes. Right? That's the whole idea. Like, that's not honoring to your parents if you wear that. I mean, pushing the edge in the way you dress. What about the gray areas? You know, those areas where aren't necessarily sin, they're just your parents' preferences. Do you honor them in their convictions and in their preferences? Or do you argue with them? It's not in the Bible. And how's your behavior when you're away from home? How's your behavior when your parents aren't around? I mean, what kind of student are you? What kind of teammate are you? What kind of friend are you? Because you're representing your parents, and you're either honoring them or you're dishonoring them. Proverbs 20, verse 11 says, "It is by his deeds that a lad distinguishes himself, if his conduct is pure and right." And I can't tell you, doing 15 years of student ministry and now pastoring for 11 years, I know so many teenagers that will appear really spiritual. And they talk the Christian talk, and they seem to have this wonderful relationship with God. But if they don't honor their parents, they don't have a great relationship with God. They don't. That's the command. Children, honor, obey your father and your mother. I don't care how many times you go to Bible studies. I don't care about the youth group. I don't care about all these mission things you do. What do you do at home? Do you honor your father and mother at home? And there are many young people in here. They have all kinds of restrictions in their home. You know why? Because they haven't honored their parents at home. And if they don't honor their parents at home, do you think that as parents that they're going to honor you when they're outside the home? That's why you have the restrictions. Which you could ask another question then. How responsible are you at home? Are you helpful? Do you do things without being asked or told to do them? Because isn't that an issue of honor and respect? Proverbs 23, verse 22 says, "Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old." And I would add to that, don't call your mother old either. Listen, if you want the God who created you to be upset with you, disobey your parents. You know, one of the signs of the end times is that the world is going to be in chaos and that children are going to be disobedient to their parents. And I believe we're saying that over and over and over again. Well, let's talk about older adults here, number three, the older adults. And we'll just call, listen, you guys can define these however you want, right? We'll call the older adults those who have left home and are no longer under their parents' authority. Right? You could actually break that up into a couple different categories, right? You have parents, those who have left home, not under their parents' authority, and their parents are still living, and then you have those who've left home, not under their parents' authority, and their parents have deceased. You know, that's our situation. I think one of the ways that you can honor your parents is to speak well of them when you speak to others. But I think there's another way as well. It's in the kind of person you become. It's in your character. Right? Who you become in our culture is a reflection of our parents. Does that mean good parents produce good kids and bad parents produce bad kids? I'm not saying that. Right? I am saying that in our culture, when you see really good kids, you go back and go, man, I wonder what they did in their parenting. When you see really bad kids, just a family of bad children, you go, they missed something somewhere. Look at Proverbs 23, verse 24. It says, the father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who sires a wise son will be glad in him. And so let your father and your mother be glad, and let her rejoice who gave birth to you. I would simply say, listen, be the kind of person that mom and dad are going to rejoice about. I'm not talking about just your career, right? Really, it's your character. Are you known for being wise and merciful and compassionate? Are you known as one who's loving and generous? Honor your parents by becoming the kind of person that they would be proud of. And I think as an adult child, another way that you can honor your parents is by affirming them. Have you ever told your parents, I'm really glad you're my mom. I'm really glad that you're my dad. I'm so thankful for you. You know, as older adults, also I think as our parents get older, we honor our parents by taking care of them. And I can personally attest that taking care of aging parents is one of the greatest privileges that I've had as a child. Remember when Paul was writing to Timothy about family relationships and what to do with widows, and he gives really clear instruction for what children are to do when they have aging parents. Look at 1 Timothy 5. If any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family and to make some return, he says, to their parents. But this is acceptable in the sight of God. The idea of return there is, listen, when your parents took care of you when you were young, and now it's your responsibility to take care of them when they're old. It's a return for your parents. Listen, they fed you when you couldn't feed yourself. You feed them when they can't feed themselves. They changed your diapers, so you change their diapers. But what if I don't? 1 Timothy 5, verse 8, as he continues, but if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his household, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Ouch. This is before Social Security. This is before Medicare. This is before nursing homes. You honor your parents by the person you become and by caring for them as they age. What else can you do? Well, I think you honor your parents by including your parents in what you do. Like bring them along. Visit your parents. Or bring them with you. Bring them with you on vacation. I know for us, both my parents and Sherry's parents have both died. We spent the vast majority of our years while they were still alive. Our vacations, we went and visited parents. We spent time with our parents. Call your parents. Visit them regularly. And it's easy now, right? I mean, we got FaceTime, we got, you know, text messages. You can be so involved with your parents. You know, one of the saddest things for me and Sherry both is just seeing how many of the elderly are just stuck in these assisted living facilities or nursing homes just waiting to die. I mean, they have kids, they have grandkids, and those kids don't call, and they don't visit, and they don't write. I remember when my dad was in assisted living, and we were so good. I mean, I'm so thankful for my siblings. We visited him regularly. We had schedules to make sure that he wasn't alone. But I'd go there, and I'd talk to his friends, and I would just ask their stories. You know, like, you know, you have kids? Oh, yeah, I've got kids. They talk about their kids. They show you pictures. They have grandkids. They show you all the pictures. And I'd say, wow, now do they get to come here often? Oh, no, they're too busy. That's terrible. They're too busy. I think busy doing what? But doing what? You know how much I would love to spend time with my mom? 16 years ago, she died. You know how much I would enjoy going fishing with my dad, who died last year? You know how many recipes and cooking techniques that I would love to have learned? You know how many stories of their childhoods are forever lost because I was too busy? Honor your parents. Spend time with your parents. You know, another way to honor your parents is to ask for their advice. For the vast majority of my life, I did not have a good relationship with my dad. And so I didn't ask him for much of anything. And then as we're caring for him in his last years, you know, I remember asking, and I don't remember what it was about, but I asked him about some family stuff that we were going through. I was like, hey, Dad, how would you deal with this? And he was so, like, taken aback. He was shocked. He was like, oh, I don't know. You know what's best. Just do what you think is best. I thought, I really wanted your input. And then I found out, well, if I ask him about fishing, well, he'll tell me all about fishing. He's like, all kinds of advice, right? You want to get blackhead mullet certain times of the year? Oh, they're really big. You go under this bridge over there, and you have this mesh of net. I asked him about how to make a pizza crust. Man, I mean, he was right on it. He could tell me all of these things that he loved to do. You know, it honored him when I would just sit there and ask him stuff. He told me how to make jigs to catch pompano. Make his own jigs. Told me how to fish for sheephead the best way. We talk for hours about stuff like that. I've yet to make a jig. But it honored him. Because I asked for his advice. So let me see if we can summarize this. And really, just three principles for honoring our parents. Regardless of where you are in life, I think this is true. Number one, honoring what you say. Honoring what you say. And it's not just saying fake stuff, right? It's the mouth speaks from that which fills the heart. And what we say to them and what we say about them is as much an indication of where our hearts are as it is to how good their parenting was. Colossians 4, verse 6 says, let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. Listen, don't argue everything, even if you're right. Being right is overrated. I mean, you may know better, and your way may be better, but there's a way to communicate it or not communicate it, like keeping your mouth shut, to keep that relationship strong. Like, you don't have to win every little detail of every little issue, right? It's okay to come to a different conclusion and not dishonor your parents and how you speak to them. Number two, honor in how you obey. When I say obey, I'm not just talking about children, like the little guys obeying their parents. I'm talking about honoring God and obeying God by honoring our parents. And I know there's all kinds of different circumstances surrounding your childhood and your raising and all that stuff. I'm just reminding you to honor them, whether they were good parents or bad parents. And to keep doing good for them, whether they were good parents or bad parents. Galatians 6 says, let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. And listen, sometimes the roles get reversed. As a child of an aging parent, you have to start parenting your parents. I don't know if any of you guys have had to do it. you can't eat that, you can't do this. You know, it's kind of a weird little transition there. And the last one, number three, honor in who you become. Really, I think, you know, in the long term, this is the best way to honor your parents, is in your character. And so if you had really bad parents, don't let your character be like them. And if you had really great parents, then model do what they modeled for you. Now, if I could recommend one book that I would say, man, I hope every family in our church reads it. It's a book called Peacemaking for Families by Ken Sandy. Peacemaking for Families by Ken Sandy. Rebecca's laughing because we use that book all the time in counseling. A lot of times we'll say, listen, if we can just get to the principles in this book, if we can start working through the principles in this book, it will transform your family. We ought to probably teach it here on a Sunday morning, Sunday school time, or maybe during the week, but we'll work through that. All right, let me pray. Father, thank you so much. Thank you for my parents. Not perfect parents, imperfect, just like I am. But I thank you for the life that you've given me and the principles that I learned through them. I thank you for the way that they have shaped and molded and made me, how they gave me such a respect for church and for God, even though neither of them knew Christ before while we were growing up. But I'm grateful that they know him now, and they're rejoicing with you now in heaven. And so, Father, I pray for our church. Wow, what a unique thing it would be for us as a church to be known as those children who come from this body of believers who honor and love their parents. What a testimony of grace that would be. Pray that you would help us to nurture our families and to nourish our families so that we would be obedient as Christ was to his Father. So take this time that we sing back to you and be honored with it. We ask in Christ's name. Amen.